I loved where things went this morning in worship. And it's not just because I wanted to play the drums longer, in all honesty. I loved where things went this morning in worship. And specifically, I'm talking about what Kirk talked about with what Angie talked about. And this idea of let heaven come. Let heaven come. God's kingdom here on earth. And I read the Gospels and I can't help but feel when I'm reading the end of Luke and I'm reading the end of Matthew and I'm reading the end of Mark and I'm reading the end of John, I can't help but feel a little bit of what the disciples felt. This can't be it. This can't be the end. This can't be over. Jesus, you died too soon, right? I mean, if we're honest, those disciples, that's had to have been what was going through their mind. Jesus, you died too soon. And I think when that thought goes through our mind, I think we forget why Jesus came to earth in the first place, right? See, to understand Jesus dying after only 3 years of ministry is to realize that he must have finished what he came to finish. Right? He must have finished what he came to finish. And so if there's anything left on the table to be finished, who do those crumbs fall to? Us. So if we feel like Jesus didn't finish what he was supposed to finish, then we got to realize that the only finishers left are us. It's us. So if there was anything that was left undone, who's it fall to? Us. If there was any job that didn't get done, who's it for? Us. And can we just agree that there's a lot of jobs yet? And there's a lot of finishing to be done yet? Yeah. Yeah. And so it's easy to think, Jesus, you died too soon. You were on the wrong timeline, right? You were on the wrong timeline. That's what John's thinking when he's looking up at the cross. You were on the wrong timeline. It can't end like this. But it needed to end like that so that it could end with us, right? Jesus finished what he needed to finish so that you and I could finish what he didn't finish, right? Jesus finished what he needed to finish so you and I could finish what he didn't. Okay? And that's this upside down kingdom of God. That's these Beatitudes. Jesus coming and teaching this massive sermon to this massive crowd of people. And it's all about culture. It's all about teaching them, transforming them to realize the culture of heaven was different than what they were expecting here on earth and what they were experiencing here on earth. And so Jesus comes to earth to teach them heaven's culture. But here's the deal. And Angie kind of touched on this. He didn't teach us heaven's culture while he was here on earth so that we could wait to heaven to get to heaven to experience the culture of heaven. Does that make sense? Like he didn't come and teach in his first massive public sermon, hey, here's how you're supposed to live after you die. But sometimes that's our interpretation of Christianity. Like, I agree with this. I love this. I want to experience this. When I die someday, it's going to be so great. What a day that will be. Right? Right? Well, what if that culture was meant for today? What if that culture was meant for now? See, that changes everything then. But Jesus, you died too soon. You didn't finish what you were. No, I finished. I finished. And Jesus finished well. Amen. So that we could finish well, right? Amen. Right? And it's so we've got to get this reality or understand this thinking that these Beatitudes, this heaven's culture, is a now experience. It is a now experience. And I love the challenge that Angie gave this morning. Right? If what you're walking out right now isn't how you expect life to be for you when you're in heaven, Well, there's a problem. Amen. Something's wrong. Something's missing, and it isn't your death certificate that's missing. Okay? It's not. It's not. It's not that that's missing. It's something in our cultural makeup. So we're going to hit you, or I'm going to hit you, with some ideas for peacemakers. Kirk talked for 3 weeks on peacemakers, and he did a phenomenal job. And he's been doing a phenomenal job this whole series of Beatitudes. How many of you have been blessed with these Beatitudes? Wow. Yes, definitely. Definitely. And so I've been listening to his Peacemaker sermons on my laptop this week. And it was like, he did such a great job. And I knew I was going to be preaching coming up here. And it was like, where do I go next? Like, what am I supposed to preach on next kind of thing? And yesterday morning, I was going through my routine. I went downstairs, took the dog outside, started the coffee pot, turned on my phone to a sermon, stuck it in my pocket so I could listen to a sermon while I was getting my coffee ready and stuff like that. And all of a sudden it was just like, boom, this is what you need to be speaking on. Oh, and by the way, it starts tomorrow. Okie dokie. Okie dokie, right? And Kirk did a great job. And so when I was going through this, I was worried because I'm going to be teaching on being a peacemaker. And I didn't want it to sound redundant. And I didn't want you to feel like this is me admonishing you because you didn't get Kirk's sermons well enough. So now I got to hit you with two more. No, it's not any of this. It's just, this is what I feel God is wanting me to speak on. And it's all about tools for creating peace. And so I titled my sermon, Consider Your Ways, and it's all about creating peace in the midst of turmoil. Have you ever heard of having the wrong tool for the job? That's how you cut Brian's hair, Shelly?
No, I cut hair too low.
Oh, with a chainsaw? Oh, man. Oh, man, that's pretty trim. I like it. I like it. Yeah, the wrong tool for the job. Anybody here ever tried using the wrong tool for the job, or am I just the only one? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So I'm going to tell you a story, because if you're like me, you know it's the wrong tool, but in your stubbornness, you're just going to make that thing work. I know. This isn't the right thing to have, but I don't want to go down to the basement to get what I actually need. I don't want to go out to the shop. I don't want to go grab what I know is actually... I have to walk all the way back to the house. I'm just going to make this work. Anybody had those thoughts in your head? Or is that just me? Yeah, so a couple years ago, Trisha and I got a flat tire here at church. We got done with it. I think it was an evening service for some reason. And walk outside, and my van is flat to the ground. And I'm like, oh, man, flat tire. And I've had lots of flat tires in my life. I'm just going to say that right now. I'm pretty sure I've had 5 in the last year. So anyway, I'm pretty good at changing a tire. But this van, I remembered when we bought it, the person we bought it from, the only thing that's missing is tire iron, okay? And I remember thinking, oh, that's no big deal. I can get one of those at a hardware store. You ever tell yourself that and then you never get that thing? Oh, it's just missing this. Oh, yeah, that's easy. I'll just go to the hardware store and get that. And then 5 years go by and you're selling that thing and you never got for it what you needed to get for it or something like that, right? Yeah, I mean, that's just how we are sometimes. Or at least that's how I am, sorry. Okay, I don't want to disillusion you with my grandeur, because I make a lot of mistakes on a daily basis. So here we go. Here's one of them. So here's the van. I never bought the tire iron, and now I need the tire iron. And so I've got a flat tire. And so I remembered I had once upon a time. He's just walking away. Where'd he go? When we bought our house, I remember finding this tool thing down in my basement, and it's a 21-piece socket wrench set, professional automotive. And so I'm like, hey, awesome, I'm gonna stick this in my vehicle, okay? And so every time we've changed vehicles, this nice, beautiful on sale today. If anybody wants to buy this from me after church today, just let me know. I'm kidding. And so anyway, so this just goes into the next vehicle. And so I remember, oh yeah, that's right. I bought that socket set. And so I'm looking at that tire, knowing I need a tire iron. And I'm like, I bet I could wing it with a socket wrench, right? So I pull out my socket wrench. You already know where this is going, don't you? Grab my 3/4-inch bolt, and I'm like, hey, I need some leverage. Got to torque on this somehow. So I'm going to grab my extender. Well, if you look at my extender, he's a little sad looking now because he wasn't the right tool for the job. And my drop-forged steel chrome-plated socket wrench set just got destroyed because I was using the wrong tool for the job. And what would I expect? How many of you knew before I even told you that I was going to take off a tire, I was going to loosen my tire bolts with a socket wrench, how many of you knew this was going to go nowhere good? Be honest, how many of you knew I was going to... Schaumburgs are all waving at me, you idiot. Can't believe it. Can't believe it. But that's what we do in our stubbornness. I know this isn't going to work, but it's got to work. You ever heard that yourself say that? Those words come out of your mouth? I know this isn't going to work, but it's got to work. It's just got to. But I know it's not going to, but it's just got to. Right? Or is the only person in this room that gives himself weird pep talks? Me, right? Right? We use the wrong tool for the wrong job. And when we use the wrong tool for the wrong job, we get frustrated, right? Because now Trish is like, that's never going to work. Right? And so now I've got a point to prove, not only to myself, but to my wife, because I am Stephen, and she chose me, right? She chose me for a reason, and it was for this moment in our marital bliss that she selected me to use a socket wrench to remove a tire. It didn't work. She's like, you should just call somebody. Call Kirk. Call Kirk. Really? You're going to bring in another guy? Sorry. No, I got this. I got this. I got this. Because now I've got to have this, right? And I've just dug myself in deeper and deeper and deeper. Husbands, how many husbands have ever dug themselves in deeper and deeper and deeper? Kelly, get your hand up.
Give
him some time. I like that, Shelly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give him some time. He's already got the shovel. Right? Exactly. So yeah, we dig ourselves in. We dig ourselves in, and now there's this point of no turning back. Like, I got to make this work, and so I wreck my extender. And it's at the point that I wreck my extender that I'm just like, okay, okay, okay. We'll call Kirk. And so Kirk rolls in with his minivan that has a tire iron. And then I'm able to get the job done. And it's crazy because I wasted all that time, right? I wasted all that time, all that effort, all that energy, all that frustration, when all I really needed to do was do the right thing in the first place. But that's sometimes our walk with Christ. We waste time. We waste energy. We get frustrated. We dig ourselves into the ground. And then somehow we blame him out of our frustration for the mess we got ourselves into, right? Right? Because when Trisha's saying you should call Kirk, I'm not mad at Kirk. I'm not even mad at the tire anymore. I'm mad at Trisha for suggesting something like that, right? And I shouldn't be mad at Trisha for suggesting something like that. But here I am mad at her, and she's not the source of the problem. I was the source of the problem. It wasn't the flat tire anymore. It was me. And so we get mad at God thinking he's the source of the problem and it was our problem to begin with and we are the ones that dug ourselves down deeper. That's right. And so we need to realize that it's time for us to maybe swap out our tools. See, because I believe what you use determines what you can create. What you use determines what you can create. I've been trying my hand at desserts lately. I love cooking. Love it. Love it. And so one area where I'm not so good is desserts. And so I thought, I'm going to try some desserts now. And we got this big bag of apples, and so I've been winging it with different apple recipes. What can I do? You know, kind of thing like that. And so the other night, I decided I was going to surprise the kids. So I took some butter out, took out some brown sugar, took out some cinnamon, sliced up some apples, fried them in a skillet, and then threw in some granola with them to sizzle the granola. And then we had ice cream, and then I served that over the top with some caramel sauce, right? Okay. If you're hungry right now, you should be. Okay. That means you're American if you're hungry right now. Okay. And so... so I did that. So then last night we had young adults out at Kirk and Marnie's house, or Life Together, whatever you want to call it. And so I came in from mowing the lawn, and I'm like, I'm going to make a dessert for tonight. We got those crab apples, and so I get out crab apples, and I get out brown sugar, and I get out butter, and I get out my cinnamon. And Elliot comes into the kitchen, and he goes, Dad, are you making an apple dessert? I'm like, yeah, yeah. Well, how do you know? He saw the ingredients, right? He saw the ingredients, so he knew what I was trying to create, right? So what you determine, what you use determines what you create, right? So bread dough, tomato sauce, mozzarella, what can we create? Pizza! Yeah, Matt, he knows that. He knows that. It's pizza. It's pizza, it's easy. How many of you were thinking pizza? How many of you are now thinking pizza? And it definitely, first it was meatballs, and then it was apple, and now it's pizza, right? Our stomachs, right? Okay? But what we use determines what we'll create. And I think a lot of times we try creating something good using the wrong ingredients, using the wrong tools. I know that Brian and Shelley like to make homemade pizza at their house, okay? And so when they see these ingredients, they know that that's a junior pizza, Stephen. You need banana peppers, right? You need ground hamburger. You need sausage. There's more ingredients to pizza than that, right, you guys? Exactly, okay? And so, but most of us know that those are basic ingredients for pizza. So if I came into my house and saw those ingredients on the counter, I'd know that I was making pizza, right? Tomato sauce, bread, cheese, gasoline. We're making pizza. Sorry, Brian, she just wanted to spice it up a little bit tonight for you, okay? Just making a really hot pizza. It's going to be hot. It's going to be really hot. It's going to destroy your intestines, but it's going to be hot, right? 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 So what looked like pizza, one wrong ingredient changes the whole thing, doesn't it? I'm no longer making pizza. I'm making something that can't be consumed, right? One wrong ingredient changes the whole thing. I told Mr. Oland, he's my principal at my school, I told him this year, I'm like, I made it a goal that I'm not going to lose my temper with the sixth graders. And he knows the class that I have this year. And lots of people know the class that I have because I have parents apologizing to me on the street. Oh, you got those kids? I'm sorry. And a lot of times, it's a parent of one of my kids. Oh, I know. I can't do anything with them, right? Right? And so I told Mr. Olin, I made my goal this year. I'm not going to lose my temper with the sixth graders. And he laughed at me. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's either the best year to make that goal or the worst year to make that goal, right? Any of you ever seen the movie Airplane? Airplane, Lloyd Bridges, great actor in that movie. Picked the wrong week to quit smoking. Looks like he picked the wrong week to quit drinking, right? That's what he keeps saying in that movie. Okay? Yeah. And so maybe I picked the wrong year to try to not lose my temper with my sixth graders because they're a wily crew. They're wily. Worse than coyotes. Okay? And so the other day, I've been doing so good this year. Been doing so good. And I was reading in my class, and so, if I'm reading aloud, they only have one thing that they have to do. Just be quiet. Just be quiet. If Mr. Schultz is reading. And most of them have gotten the memo. Most of them got the memo the first day I've taken a few of them, you know, but here we are, week four of school already. And so I'm reading up in front of the class and had several kids dorking around. And so I'm like, please be quiet while I'm reading. They keep dorking around. Please be quiet while I'm reading. They keep dorking around. Please be quiet while I'm reading. And one of my sixth graders decides now is a good opportunity to smack the classmate in front of his back of the head. And the other person's response was to turn around and say, "Why'd you hit me?" and stuff like that. And I lost my goal. I didn't make it. I didn't make it. And I can be loud. Like I can be really loud. And I'm pretty sure every class in the building, K-12, knew something's happening in the sixth grade room, right? Right? So I didn't make my goal, right? And so I lose it, and the kids are looking at me like this. And they're quiet. They're quiet, right? But my goal with not losing my temper this year was to have a peaceful atmosphere in sixth grade. And sometimes we confuse peace with quiet. Because they were quiet, but were they experiencing peace right now? No, far from it. I made that atmosphere a whole lot more tense. Okay? I made that atmosphere a whole lot more tense. And we think sometimes that screaming on our kids is going to, "I told you to be quiet," right? And now they're quiet. But did you create peace, right? If we use the wrong ingredients, we're not going to end up with what we want. And we can't create peace using the wrong tools, and we definitely can't create it using the wrong ingredients. We could try. We could try. But it ain't going to happen. I want you to turn to Haggai. I've got it up on the board here. But I want you to open to Haggai. Haggai doesn't get a lot of press in the Bible. I like Haggai, though. He's called a minor prophet, not because God called him a minor prophet, just because scholars once upon a time decided he was a minor prophet. Why? Because he wrote less words than other prophets. Okay? Poor Haggai. Don't feel bad for him, though. Okay? He was a good guy. So Haggai's got this situation going on where, if you know your Bible history, or if you don't, I don't know, but Israelites had bad kings who did bad things, and eventually they ended up getting overtaken by other rulers, okay? Other powers came into be, kind of thing. And they've been the subject of a lot of this transfer of power. So first of all, the Egyptians tried destroying them. Well, that didn't work, okay? And then the Babylonians tried to destroy them, and the Israelites, all they had to do was obey God, and God was going to deliver them. Well, jump to the end of the story, they don't obey God, and they don't get delivered then. Instead, they get taken off into captivity to Babylon, and then the Babylonians are in charge. But then the Babylonians end up being taken over by the Persians, and it's this power vacuum, which eventually is going to lead to the Romans taking over. And so hopefully you get this understanding that it was just always this transfer of power, always this transfer of authority. And I think a lot of times when we are going through difficult situations, we look to the power or the authority at B, and we try to lay blame on that for the bad decisions we make. Okay? Because, and I'll try to clarify what I mean there, is because the Israelites now, they appeal to one of the kings, I believe it's King Darius, and they are sent back, they get to go back to Jerusalem, and they're told that they can start to rebuild the temple. That's why they wanted to go back. They felt bad, like, we need to go back and build our temple. Actually, it was King Cyrus of Persia. And so Cyrus says, "You guys, yeah, go back, build your temple," kind of thing. Go do that. And so the Israelites go back, and a lot of the history of Haggai is actually found in Ezra. okay, which is another minor prophet in the Bible. And Ezra writes about how the Israelites, they got back, and they were supposed to be building the temple. That's why Cyrus sent them back. And so they're going to start to build the temple, and some people that got left in the original exile who have now grown up, because it's been 70 years. Okay, 70 years is a long time. So these, it would be Jewish people, Hebrew people, that would have been left back out in the country, have still been living in the area. But they've married, and they've got kids, and they've got their own culture kind of thing. And so this remnant of Jews that was left encounters this remnant of Jews that are coming back. And this remnant of Jews that are coming back are saying, okay, yeah, all right, we're supposed to build the temple. And these remnants of Jews that are here go, oh, all right, let's build the temple. And the remnant of Jews that just got back, courtesy of King Cyrus, said, sorry, you're not good enough. You guys didn't come into exile, so therefore you can't help us with building this temple. Run away. Be gone. Because if you were a real Jew, you would have been with us in Babylon, not back here, fending for yourself, having kids, and doing all that. Okay? And so the Jews that were back get offended by this, and so they start to stir up trouble. And a letter gets sent back to Cyrus. Cyrus, guess what's happening? These Jews are building the temple. They're building the wall. They're fortifying the city. They're going to rise up again as a power. So Cyrus gets this letter, and he's like, okay, I guess don't build the temple then. And he sends the letter back. And so this remnant of Jews that were all excited to build the temple, they get this letter from Cyrus. Now, they were ordered by God to build the temple. The whole reason that they ended up back in Jerusalem to begin with was because they had a mandate, a calling from God to rebuild the temple. But now they get an order from a king who says, don't rebuild the temple. Well, now what do you do with that? I've got conflicting reports. God said to do this, but now this power and authority says, don't do this. And I think sometimes we use rules of power and authority as a crutch for reasons why we disobey God. Have you ever had somebody tell you, oh, schools changed as soon as they took prayer out of schools? Maybe you've even said that. Really? Because I pray every single day in school. And I've never been arrested for it. What they said is I couldn't make you pray. I couldn't say to Shelly, she has to pray. I couldn't say, you guys all need to stand up now and pray. That's what they told me I couldn't do. But you know what a lot of believers have done? They've used that as a crutch for a reason why they don't pray in school. Why don't you pray in school? Well, you can't. Really? It doesn't say that anywhere. Look it up. Search it out. It doesn't say that anywhere. And we use sometimes a lot of situations and a lot of authority figures, people of influence, we use their weird decisions to justify weird decisions that we make. And we should never let somebody else's disobedience be an excuse for our disobedience. Never let somebody else's disobedience be an excuse for your disobedience. Because if God tells you to do something, well, boy, howdy, you should do it. Right? Now, I say all that because now I'm going to tell a dumb story about me, okay? Because I do a lot of dumb things. A couple weeks ago, I was in Walmart. And I was going through the checkout line, had my stuff, and there was this guy. He was kind of rough looking, and he's in the checkout. He was in the checkout. It would have been behind me, and I just saw him as I was, you know, doing my grocery thing or whatever, and I just caught him out of the corner of my eye. Right? catch people out of the corner of your eye all the time. Think nothing of it. But for some reason, I just kept thinking about this dude. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, why I cannot get this guy out of my mind. And I really felt like God was telling me that I should pay for his stuff that he was buying. And so I'm going through my thing, like, God, is that really you? Well, let's put the eggs with the milk so they don't get crushed. Anybody ever been in that situation? And the anxiety starts to build. And why is the anxiety building? Oh, it's something I don't want to do. Anxiety is building because of disobedience. Because I know what I should do. I know what I've been called to do. I don't want to do it. And it starts making me feel anxious. And I'm getting near the end of my groceries and I see he's still behind me. And I'm just like, oh man, oh man, is this God? Is this really you? Let me just say, if you get impressed on your heart that you should buy somebody else's groceries, a random stranger in Walmart who you've never met before in the history of the world, chances are it's only God. It's not like Satan's sitting there going, they're going to buy his groceries. We fooled them. Look at them be nice to that stranger. Right? Right? But yet we wrestle with it? What are we thinking? We're thinking too much, actually. God, is this, you know, I don't know if it should be you or whatever, whatever, and you know, I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to, you know, look for another sign other than the guy being there and me thinking about him, right, right? And so I, the lady's asking for me to pay, and so I'm paying, so I turn around, and I see him ask the lady for a tin of long cut. You know what long cut is? Chewing tobacco. So now, guess what? Marilyn, what's that word? Now I have an excuse. I don't have to obey God because he's being disobedient by ordering a thing of chew. So why use somebody else's disobedience as an excuse for my disobedience? What? But I did. Like, well, clearly God doesn't want me to buy his groceries. That was a weird thought. Here we go, out of the store. Right? Right? That should be the end, right? It should have left me. It didn't leave me. It didn't leave me. Because now something that was simple, now it got dug deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm not saying that it was a shame situation. It wasn't a shame situation. It was a, Stephen, really, how righteous do you think you are situation? How righteous do you think you are that you could use somebody else's disobedience as a reason for your own? Gulp. Right? But we do that. We do that. And so the Israelites, oh, Cyrus told us we can't build the temple, even though God told us we should build the temple. But you know what? You know what? I didn't really want to build the temple anyway. It was going to be a lot of work. I need to build my house. So, all right, fine. We're not going to build the temple. But it's because Cyrus said we couldn't, right? And then Haggai rolls on the scene. He didn't have a Delta 88 like Kirk Snaza did, though. With Pink Floyd blasting in the back. Oh, wait, he was saved. It was Petra, praise, I forgot. Haggai rolls into town, and Haggai drops a bomb on these Israelites, and he says, now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts. This is where this is coming from. I didn't have to question whether it was God or not in Walmart. I know now. And I knew then that it was God. I just needed an excuse to make up that it wasn't God. Therefore, consider your ways. I know you're blaming Cyrus for not building the temple. I know you're blaming him for not doing what I called you to do. But I'm not here to talk about Cyrus, people. I'm not here to talk about him. I'm here to talk about you. And if you've ever had kids, your kids will use a weird choice from their sister or their brother to make an excuse for the weird choice that they made. Why'd you hit your sister? Well, she hit me. So that makes it right? Right? Sometimes. It depends. I don't know. Tate, there's got to be times when Sydney is, oh my goodness, just really, really, really? Yeah, but we do it all the time. We think that our ways are higher than the ways of others. Anybody ever had that weird thought? As I'm checking out of Walmart and making an excuse for my own disobedience because, well, at least I'm not buying Long Cut. Right? But we do that, don't we? And if you chew Long Cut, I'm sorry. Okay? I am sorry. I'm not preaching at you right now, I promise. But we do that. We do that. We do that. Consider your ways. See, we'd rather consider somebody else's ways. Well, my God, I know I sin, but I'm not that bad. I'm not on Cops or anything. Right? Right? Well, at least I don't do this. I may lose my temper with my kids, but it's not like I beat my wife or anything. But we justify. We justify all the time. We consider the ways of others. We'd rather focus on their actions or their inactions. Well, if somebody would just do their job right, I wouldn't have to be so mad all the time. Sorry, anger's a sin. So you being mad is on you. Them not doing their job is on them. So consider your ways in this situation, right? Consider your ways. You've sown much, but harvest little. You eat, but there's not enough to be satisfied. You drink, but you never have your fill. You put on clothing, but no one is warm enough. And he who earns wages only to put into a purse with holes in it. Thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Stop thinking about what other people should be doing or shouldn't be doing. What should you be doing? Or what shouldn't you be doing? Because I've got enough problems trying to manage my own life, I don't want to try managing somebody else's. Okay? I'm just going to say that out there. Okay? And you know who else we'd rather blame if it's not the people we're surrounded by? It's probably God's fault. If God, if you would have only done this, or if God, if you wouldn't have allowed that, and all of a sudden we start to try to blame God, we try to think about what he should have been doing or what he shouldn't have been doing. And we try to use that as an excuse for us being disobedient, and we never consider what we're contributing or not contributing to the situation. So we got to make obedience a first step, in my opinion. We got to stop making it the last step. We had a little kiddo at our house last week, an up-and-coming three-year-old. How many remember up-and-coming three-year-olds? They're fun. They're cute, but they're naughty. Sometimes. Right? And it's just like you ask this child to do the right thing because you know what the right thing is. So you ask them, do the right thing. But we can't make the choice for them. They're still able to choose because they have free will, because they're a human being. And so we ask them to do this, but we also realize that in asking somebody to do something, they still have the choice to say, okay, or nah, don't feel like it. And so this little up-and-coming three-year-old had a lot of, yeah, don't feel like it moments. And what this three-year-old is learning is that making the wrong choice is no fun. It's always more work. It's always, believe me, it was a whole lot more work trying to wrench that tire off with this than when I got the tire iron. Oh, this was easy, right? I knew it was going to be easy, though, but I still tried this anyway because in my stubbornness, I knew what was right, but I wanted to make this right anyway. And we do that with God. We know what's right. 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 It's right there. We know what's right. But sometimes that doesn't keep us from doing the wrong thing. And we make obedience our last attempt. Okay, God, finally. Fine, I'll do it your way. Good. That's what I was waiting for. Right? Right? We got to stop making obedience. We got to keep things simple. I use that statement with my sixth graders. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Okay? If you do weird things, I'm going to have to come up with weird rules. Keep it simple. Okay? Keep it simple, and then you don't end up with lots and lots and lots of weird rules. Keep it simple. Jesus tried to keep it simple. He issued two commands before he left earth. Love God, love others. But then there was this Pharisee that was like, well, wait, but what? But you say others, you say neighbor. But like neighbor, that means like, well, you know, Stan. He's my neighbor, right? 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 Because we're in proximity. But I can choose to make him not my neighbor, right? But Jesus, right? Keep it simple, right? Love God, love others. But I'm gonna and then God has to come up with a rule. Oh, no, I meant love Stan. Okay, I'll love Stan then. But not Dave. Not Dave. Not Dave. And then God has to come up with a rule. Yes, Dave. Okay. All right. Well, I can deal with Stan and Dave. But not Travis. Definitely not Travis. And then God has to come up with a weird rule. Well, yes, Travis. And before we know it, we end up with 613 Levitical codes in the Old Testament. Because we're going, but. How many rules did Adam and Eve have? One. Don't eat from the tree. And they didn't follow the rule. And look what happened. One rule, teach this in Sunday school. One rule became 10 rules, became 613 rules. Jesus thankfully dies on the cross, and now we have two. But it's our job to keep it at two. Yes. It is our job to keep it at two. There's our finishing job. Keep it at two. See, because I believe most of our anxiety and our frustration is directly tied to one thing and one thing only. Disobedience. If you feel anxious, it's because you're being disobedient in some way. And that's a hard word to say. And that's hard for me to say, and that's probably hard for you to hear, but realize it's just as hard for me to hear myself say it as it is for you to hear me say it. But I can look back on times when I felt anxious in my life, and I can trace it to disobedience, where if I would have just done what I was supposed to the first time. Because that's what Haggai's talking about here. Look at, you're doing all this stuff. You're sowing, but you're not harvesting. You're eating, but you're not happy. You're drinking, but you're thirsty. All that stuff is going on. And you're spinning in circles and you're digging yourself deeper. And what do you expect, though? What do you expect? We need to stop using disobedience as a means for justifying our actions or our inactions. All right, I better leave you with something. Oh my goodness, what in the world? I hope I'm giving you something today. We'll get to this next week for sure. For sure, but I'm going to leave you with the first one, all right? And I promise I'm going to be very brief with it. But I want to give you tools. When I asked Kirk to preach this Sunday and next Sunday is, I wanted to leave you with tools for creating peace. Because we're called to be peacemakers, right? We heard that. We're called to be peacemakers, but some of you are looking at your life going, how? How do I create peace? And it could be that you're using the wrong ingredients, and it could be that you're using the wrong tools. Because there's tools for creating peace, but just as easy as there's tools for creating peace, there's tools for creating anxiety. Worship, excuse me, worship creates peace. The opposite of worship is worry. Worry creates anxiety. Why? Because why are those opposites? How are those words connected? Well, because they both involve our focus. Both of those tools involve our focus. When I'm worshiping God, guess what? I'm focused on God. But just as easily, I can focus on my problems. And that creates worry in my life. See, I know I like fasting. Something that I've found to be very effective in my life. Okay? And when I talked to you guys a while back about King Jehoshaphat, when I was talking to you about meekness, and King Jehoshaphat, he gave us three tangible things that we can do in the face of a problem when we're trying to leave room for God to move. Do you remember what they were? They were pray, fast, and worship. That's what he did. That was the recipe for success for Jehoshaphat. Pray, fast, worship. Because did you know that you can pray and still be worried? Did you know that you could stop eating and still be worried about the same thing you're not eating for? But the thing that's going to get me to stop worrying is to put my attention where it needs to be. My attention needs to be on God. I need to worship. Don't confuse this. Worship isn't just something that happens on Sunday mornings between 9:45 and 10:45. Worship is a lifestyle. It is meant to be a lifestyle. It can't be just Sunday for an hour. It's got to be when you work. It's got to be when you play. It's got to be when you drive. It's got to be when you rest. It's got to be when you're eating. It's got to be when you're talking. Worship has to be a lifestyle. It can't. Trisha and I were at a conference last week, and the speaker was teaching to us. He's talking to us. It was a bunch of us children's ministry workers. And he said something that stuck with me. He says, if it happens in church, but it doesn't happen in your home, then it's not Christianity. And that's exactly what Angie was talking about today. If it happens, if I'm one way in church, but a different way at home, something's wrong. And that's not Christianity. It is not Christianity. And the best way that I can think of to show this with worship and worry is a psalm of David. Psalm 119, verses 145 to 152, and this is where we're going to end today. Notice how this psalm starts out. I call with all my heart, and I will obey your decrees. I call out to you, save me, and I will keep your statutes. I rise before dawn and cry for help. Right? David is in distress in the beginning of this psalm. He needs saving from something. He's worried about something. But notice the turn here. So he starts off in distress, but notice the turn here in verse 148. My eyes stay open through the watches of the night. Anybody ever stayed up through the night worried about something? But notice what David's doing. My eyes stay up through the watches of the night that I may meditate on your promises. We stay up worrying about something. Have you ever tried staying up worshiping someone? I guarantee you, you're going to get different results. In one situation, nothing will change. In the other situation, everything will change. David learns that worship is what he needs to do. And so instead of laying up, my eyes stay through the watches of the night, I was thinking about my problem. I was thinking about this and that. And how am I going to do this? And how are we going to pay for that? And how can we? No, I'm distressed. But David knows, no, I got to meditate your promises. I got to meditate on your promises. And so first tool for creating peace, if you don't want anxiety, is let's get those eyes where they belong.